Nana, are you okay?
Hello, welcome to episode 82 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a movie podcast where we review and hash out the week's movie news. This week, I'm joined with Angie Han.
Hello.
And Perry Nemiroff is actually off at Toronto, so she'll be back with us next week. But this week, Angie and myself, Christy Puchko, are going to review The Visit. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about the latest exciting Captain Marvel rumor. Angie, why don't you take it?
All right, so the first thing I want to say is this is just a rumor. It's not a confirmed fact, but the word going around is that at the top of Marvel's wish list for casting the lead of Captain Marvel is Rebecca Ferguson, the breakout star of Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I love this choice because basically I saw Mission Impossible Rogue Nation and was just like, someone needs to give this woman her own action movie franchise. I mean, not only is she really, like, confident and bold and sexy, but, like, she's got, like she's a really good, she's, like, got a really good physicality for action movies, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. That was the thing that was so incredible about Rogue Nation was, like, we had never really heard of her before, and then she was going punch for punch with Tom Cruise, and, like, it was incredible to watch. She was so much fun, and she also had this really great sense of character to the way she did her action. Like, the first thing you see her do is kick off these incredibly fancy shoes, and that may sound like nothing, but she made these little character moments really work to bring together a character really quickly, and I think that'll be helpful for Captain Marvel, because while a lot of people are excited about this movie, I would argue there are probably more people excited about Captain Marvel than actually know anything about the character. Because I'm one of them, where I'm just ready for Marvel to have a fucking female heroine having her own movie, and I know, like, some of the things from some of the fan art from the online, and I like it. So I'm like, this will be cool. But, yeah, beyond that, I don't know a lot about Captain Marvel, which I kind of excited about, because that's actually how I'm introduced to most superheroes, is through their movies. So I like the idea of giving it to somebody who I think could do something really interesting with it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that a lot of people are more excited about the idea of Captain Marvel than really know a lot about her. But from what I understand, she's just kind of got like this, like, she's kind of like got a big personality. She's a complicated person. She's also a decorated military veteran or something. So, I know. I'm giving away that I don't actually know that much about her. Oops.
She does the militaries.
Right. So, to give you some idea of the kind of person that, you know, fans want, the kind of person that the character is, some of the more popular fan casting picks have been, like, Emily Blunt and Katie Sackhoff for, you know, Edge of Tomorrow and Battlestar Galactica, respectively. And while I think they're both good choices, first of all, I don't think Emily Blunt really needs a Marvel superhero movie at this point if she doesn't want one.
Well, remember, she was actually up for Black Widow at one point, but I don't know if it's known if she said no or if it's just that they were like, we're going with Scarlett Johansson.
It's not clear. I mean, I'd be very happy for her to do it. Like, I would be fucking thrilled if Emily Blunt got it, but if we're going with for someone who's a little bit of a lesser-known pick, which Marvel usually tends to do with the exception of, like, Benedict Cumberbatch, I think Rebecca Ferguson is great. She's not only is she a great pick for all the reasons that we've already said, but she's actually kind of at the right point in her career where what she needs right now to get up to the next level is a superhero movie, because that seems to be the pattern in Hollywood right now, is that, you know, you break out in some indie or like in a supporting role somewhere, and then you book the big superhero movie and then you become, you know, an A-list star.
Totally. And yeah, I think she'd fit really well into the Marvel mold. We're actually going to share in the information section a piece Angie wrote a few months ago about people that could be up for the role of Captain Marvel, and she's got a lot of really inspired picks, so do check it out. She has people that were, like, actually in discussion, also just some choices I thought were really fucking cool. And, you know, it bums me out. I actually did this interview recently with a comic book writer, and she was talking about how, like, the problem we've discussed a lot with Black Widow and the burden of representation is that we just need a bunch more female superhero movies. So, like, when I look at your list, Angie, I'm like, yeah, any of these would be amazing in that part. And then I just get mad because I'm like, why don't we just have more female superheroes? Like, why do I have to pick between, like, 15 really great fucking actresses for one goddamn movie?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, every time Marvel needs to cast yet another 30-something white guy, it's starting to feel like we're fucking running out. They're like, for Doctor Strange, you're like, oh, fuck, I don't know. Just call Benedict Cumberbatch or something. I'm not saying I don't like Benedict Cumberbatch or that he's going to be bad in the role.
It's just funny. It was funny because at one point I was doing an interview with Kobe Smulders and Guy Pearce for this little movie they did called Results. And I said, well, you guys are both in the Marvel Universe. And they both started laughing. And they were just like, honestly, give it like 5 years and everyone's going to be in the Marvel Universe. They joked that like SAG is entirely funded by Marvel at this point.
Like, it does kind of feel like it. Like sometimes, like there's this dumb game I play with myself when I watch movies sometimes where I try to count how many Marvel people are in it. And like, the more movies come out, the easier and easier this game gets because like half of the actors you've heard of have been in one of them.
Maybe my next list for Pajiba should just be actors that haven't been in a Marvel movie yet. It would actually be kind of stupid hard to do at this point.
It wouldn't be that hard necessarily because what you would have to do is find out who's in the DC movies and just start listing those people.
There you go. but we don't know how accurate it is that Rebecca's actually being eyed for this, but we're both in favor.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if anyone is listening that can actually do something about it, yes, please also cast all the other people that we, you know, have talked about, or please cast all the other people that we would like to see in Captain Marvel in other female superhero roles.
You know, I'm genuinely afraid this is going to go to, like, Amber Heard, and then I'm just going to have to scream for 1,000 hours.
You mean like when Gal Gadot got cast in Wonder Woman and people kind of were like,
But the thing is, I at least like Gal Gadot a lot in Furious 5 because like I didn't really pay attention to, I think she's introduced in Furious 4.
It's not that I didn't like her or that I don't think she's going to do a good job. Honestly, like I like her in the Furious movies and I haven't seen enough of her outside of them to have really any good idea of what she's capable of. So, you know, if they picked her, I'm sure they had a good reason for it. But I think that it was... Anytime you're casting such a high-profile role, there's going to be a lot of opinions about who should get that role, and she was someone that I don't think anyone had really thought of. And then on top of that, you know, I think the fact that she is the first female superhero, once again, with the burden of representation, it made it more significant that it was her that got the role, and then people started, like, freaking out and being like, did she just cast because she was pretty? Oh, she's too skinny to be Wonder Woman. It was a whole thing where, again, if we had more female superheroes, it wouldn't have to be like, oh, you know, they screwed up Wonder Woman and now women in superhero movies are just, it's horrible forever, you know?
It's never going to work ever again.
Yeah.
So, speaking of things never working ever again, we're going to move. I don't know.
A+ transition.
We're going to move on to The Visit, which my transition on that is actually not because The Visit is a bad movie, but just because it's directed by M. Night Shyamalan and he, goddamn, man. Like, I mean, for those that don't remember, which I guess everyone does because it wasn't that long ago he became a big joke. I mean, he did The Sixth Sense, he did Unbreakable, he did Signs, he was a big deal. Everybody was like, he's the next Spielberg, he does these incredible, fun movies, and then he did, like, Lady in the Water, and then the fucking nonsense garbage piece that was Avatar The Last Airbender, which drives me so crazy. That show is so good, and that movie is just, it is just goddamn ambient for your eyes.
He also did The Happening in between and After Earth.
They were like, they never advertised it as like M. Night Shyamalan's. They were just like, hey, Will Smith, don't pay attention to the director.
Well, I want to talk about that because one thing I very vividly remember about M. Night Shyamalan when he was at his worst was that he had produced this movie called Devil, a horror movie. He didn't direct it.
The
trailer came up. And then it said, you know, produced by M. Night Shyamalan, and this theater full of people, they're not even, like, film nerds, it was just, like, a general audience, they all started laughing. And, like, up until that point, they were, like, fine with the trailer, and then everyone just started giggling, and it was just, like, I think the people, when they decided to leave him off of After Earth, were just, like,
you were hearing happening everywhere, because that happened when I saw, I don't remember what movie I saw, but it happened, the same thing happened when I went to the movies, and Devil came on. It was not the same screening as Angie, I don't even remember what the fucking movie was.
I don't think we even knew each other at that point.
No, I don't think we did. And then, like, it was something on Twitter you kept seeing where people are like, hey, people are literally laughing at the Devil trailer when M. Night's name comes up. And I'm like, oh, that's hard. So now he has The Visit, which here's the synopsis for The Visit. A single mother finds the things in her family's life go very wrong after her two young children visit their grandparents.
I'm going to pull a parry and point out that synopsis is completely incorrect. It makes it sound like the single mother is a protagonist when in fact she is barely in the movie.
Yeah, it's Catherine Hahn, and we're always happy when she's in things because she's lovely. But most of the movie she spends on Skype, like talking to her children from a distance. Because the premise is essentially... this woman has long been estranged from her parents, actually the extent of her children's lives, and now they've gotten back in touch. They're very sorry for how the falling out happened, and they want to reconnect. So she's reluctant to reconnect with them personally, but decides that she shouldn't rob her grandchildren of having grandparents, so she decides to send them for a week to stay with their grandparents. And the kids very quickly start realizing their grandparents are really weird. And it's kind of wonderful because a lot of it gets written off initially as just like, old people are weird. And I've actually seen some people criticizing like the ageism of the movie already. But here's the thing. It's told from the perspective of kids. And there's a lot of stuff about being older that kids just don't get. And the movie embraces that and runs with it. So what's funny as an adult is watching this and being on this thing of being like, I remember being very confused by older people things. And also, it's hilarious the degree at which these kids are able to convince themselves that maybe nothing's really wrong.
I don't know. I kind of see the argument about ageism. Like, it does kind of present things that there are some things that are happening to these people that are clearly really weird and fucked up. There are also other things that are not really that weird and fucked up. And, you know, if you're just an old person, it's a thing that might happen. You know, it's a thing that might just be a fact of your life. And the movie definitely treats it with this just like, oh, isn't that gross and weird? And, like, I get that it's from the perspective of the kids who would perhaps see it that way. But I don't think the movie really offers any reason not to just buy into the kids' perspective and see it as gross and weird. It's like okay. The difference between when you have a movie, you know, where, like, there's a character who's, like, homophobic or something, but the movie, like, you know, presents that viewpoint as, you know, the default or the agreed-upon viewpoint, or a that's movie that has a character that's homophobic, but then the movie keeps showing you that he's wrong or something like that.
I see what you're saying. For me, I think the movie undercuts the ageist argument by basically, like, the audience I saw it with realized the kids were over-explaining themselves to make themselves feel safe to a degree that was ridiculous. So the kids do look ridiculous. And I like that about the movie, where I felt I was relating to the kids but also laughing at them, to be perfectly frank. The kids are Becca and Tyler. Becca, I think, is like 13. Tyler's a little younger. She's kind of shy.
No, I think she's 15 and he's 13.
Oh, you're right.
In any case, they're in that age range.
Yeah, and so she's, what I didn't realize watching the trailers is this is a found footage movie where Becca is shooting a documentary about this visit because she wants to do her own kind of, like, documentary about family healing and things like that. And I like that as a narrative drive. And it actually made a lot of sense to me because a thing we've talked a lot about on this show is when found footage movies break the suspension of disbelief on why the fuck would you be carrying a camera at this point. Like, a lot of times when your character should just be fucking running, they're still keeping things in frame. And what I liked about this is it created the sense that the cameras are a safety blanket for the kids. Like, the kids seem to think that if they're behind the camera, if they have control of the camera, then even in these crazy scenarios, they're gaining some sort of power and control over the situation. So it made sense to me the whole time why the camera was rolling when it was rolling.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It did a much better job than most found footage movies. I mean, first of all, just the premise of this is a documentary justifies a lot of the times that the camera is running, which most found footage movies don't. It'll just be like, oh, I got a new camcorder. Let's just start filming every single thing we do.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. And I agree with what you're saying about it. It's really funny because you see the whole movie, you know, the girl is the director and she's trying to drive this story. Like, she has kind of like an idea of the story that she wants to tell, and then everything just kind of keeps getting all fucked up, and it's not the story she was planning on telling.
Which is also funny because she fights against that narrative, too. Like, when things start getting creepy, that's not what she wants her movie to be. So there's some comedy in that she's trying not to, like, embrace that, like, that potentially exploitative narrative as she sees it.
I also want to talk about the two kids who I thought were fantastic. They're two actors I don't think I've ever seen in anything. You know, the girl
and if you're new to the show, we around here are not particularly fond of precocious cutesy kids, so this is high praise for these two.
Olivia DeGaunt, the younger brother, because the younger brother is, you know, he's like the bratty younger brother. His hobby is that he likes to rap, and he comes up with these terrible raps all the time, and he's just always performing them. And it like, on paper, I hate this character so much. He sounds obnoxious and horrible and annoying, but it's a credit to the writing and also to the actor's performance that even though you see how he's an annoying little shit, you still kind of like him.
Yeah.
And you enjoy him.
Because, like, he starts
this.
Referring to himself as T-Diamond Stylist, and I was like, this is gonna get old. And then, remarkably, I like, don't get me wrong, the rap shit, like, wore on me, and I was just like, I'm too old for this. But I had fun with his character, especially because another really smart part about the writing in this movie and the devices they use, because they wanted to keep it family-friendly, things where kids today would normally curse, and where kids in the 80s just did curse because we weren't so freaked out by MPAA standards then, He decides that it's more creative for him as an artist and a rap artist to use female pop star names as curse words, which was really funny. Like, he falls and goes, oh, Shakira. And, like, or, like, my favorite was at one point, I think it was that he was scared of something and he yells Sarah McLachlan, which, like, made me, like, howl with laughter. And I just thought that was actually a really clever way to play with this, so that they could do what they need to do technically to make this movie appropriate for all ages, or most ages, but also stay true to a character who is going to swear because he's 13.
Yeah, I think a lot of what worked about the kids was, and what really also helps the found footage idea, is that they feel like real kids. Like, I think one of the reasons I wasn't completely just, like, turned off by that little boy was because he was bratty, but in a way that made sense to me that, like, yeah, okay, that is kind of what a 13-year-old boy would be bratty like. Like, the girl is, like, very pretentious and has, like, very high-minded ideas about her fancy documentary. And it's, you know, it could be, like, overly precocious and cute, but the movie kind of, it treats it with the appropriate amount of seriousness, which is that, you know, it understands that she's trying, but also that she sounds kind of like a ridiculous person.
Another thing I liked about it is that because it's M. Night and he has come up with such stupid fucking twists in the past, you genuinely don't know how this movie's gonna end. Because, like, it's just, like, there's, like, they tease things where, like, the grandma starts talking about, like, aliens or something, and then the grandfather tells some weird fucking story, and there's all these things where you're like, he had a movie where trees were murdering people, so, like, literally anything could happen. And for me, that kind of added to the environment. And I think this is a real, I think it's a real crowd-pleasing film. It's not a great film. It's, I was explaining this to people, that it's called a horror comedy, and that's accurate. But it's not like Shaun of the Dead or, you know, Tucker and Dale or something. It's not for adults. It is like the Gremlins. It is devotedly the kind of movie you show, like, a 12-year-old to kind of intro them into horror. And having said that, as an adult who was not there with kids but with a bunch of adults, it was really fun. I think the tension works really well. I think it's nicely silly. It didn't scare me in the long term, but I have to admit, when the trailers come on TV and I see Deanna Dunnigan, who plays Nana, like, crawling up behind them underneath the house, it's still upsetting to me.
Oh, she was fantastic. You could tell that actress was just, like, having so much fucking fun with the role, and I enjoyed that. I did not like the movie as much as you did. I mean, I've listed all the things that I liked about it, but I just, it's not like there's any specific, like, oh, you know, if only they had changed this, then I would have loved it. It's just, sure. To me, it just kind of felt like it's a movie that I sat through, and there was a lot of, like, okay, I'm watching this, I'm sitting through this. There's some tension. There's not that much tension. There's some comedy. There's not that much comedy. Oh, that's the payoff. Oh, okay. That was fine. Like, that's sure. Basically how I felt about it.
Well, you also
I do think that part of the reason that I felt, I do wonder if the part of the reason for the differences between our opinions is that you saw it earlier than I did, and I think that at the point that you saw it, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like people hadn't really talked about it that much yet. By the time I saw it, I already heard from so many people, like, oh, this is M. Night's comeback film. Like, it's surprisingly good. It's actually really fun. And I think by the time I saw it, it was a little overhyped. And at the same time, I wonder if the people who saw it earlier liked it more than they would have if it was by another director, because they were expecting something really terrible just because M. Night.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair, because I saw it, like, I think at this point, like, 3 weeks ago or something, and I wrote my review right away, because I was actually really surprised, and then I found out that a lot of people were coming on the same side of this, but, like, my review for Spinoff, I actually titled it M. Night Shyamalan's Road to Redemption Begins with The Visit, because I think people overselling this redemption arc of, like, oh, it's showing that he always was a good filmmaker, like, is not helpful. I think, one, it's going to make people think, like, have too high standards for this movie, where it's a fun movie, but it's not, like, it's not great. There's a reason it's not really a summer movie, and it's coming in this weird pocket where there's not much out. Like, it's a good movie for this time of year, where you're like, no, let's get
that sounds about right. Like, it's not bad enough that it has to be buried in, like, the last weekend of August, but if you had released it in the summer, or even in the fall when there's, like, you know, the crush of prestige pictures coming out, it would have just gotten buried.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think it's fun. I think it is a step back in the right direction for him. It's not ponderous. It's nice and short. It knows what it's doing.
And
I think
it's a lot lighter. There's none of that, like, because one of the things that I think started to drag his films down was just how heavy they had to feel, and just, like, there was, you know, there was all this symbolic weight and, like, the twist had to be completely mind-blowing. And, like, I think all these things started to trip him up. And this is a much lighter, funnier film than I think we are used to seeing from him.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's, like... I'm already seeing pieces that are like, you know, like he always was a great filmmaker. Like, no, not always. He has had some serious missteps. Like, let us never forget freaking Airbender. But like this, I thought was fun. I think if like, you know, if your kids are in middle school, I think they'd really enjoy this. If they're a little older, this might seem a little beneath them. But like, I had a really good time with it. I'm interested to see what he does next because of this. But, you know, yeah, I think managing your expectations, like, it wouldn't even make my top, like, 30 of the year, probably. But I liked it. I thought it was fun. And I kind of just want to stop there with it because, I do feel bad, Angie. I feel like, because, and I don't think I oversold it to you, but I think enough people saying.
It wasn't you, like, it wasn't like, oh, if I only had heard from, oh, one person, yeah. Oh, it's pretty good, that'd be one thing. But I had started to hear this, like, increasing hum of, built. Like, oh, this is good, this is his comeback, it's gonna do it for him. But the other thing is, you know, you want to buy into one of those narratives. Either like, oh, it's a filmmaker who was always a great filmmaker and he just got a little bit lost for a bit and like he's coming back and he's put out another masterpiece. But the truth is, real life doesn't really work that way. Like sometimes, right. You know, you do something, you're good at it, then you're like less good at it, then you start to get better again. But it's, you know, I think people want to sell this story of like, you know, and then he came back with this great thing. It's, you know, he's back at his peak, but it's just not true, and it's not how life works. And, yeah. You know, yeah, I don't think that I clearly didn't like it as much as you did, but I do think it's a step in the right direction for him. I think it's, for one thing, I think it's great that he's sort of been able to free himself of, like, the heavy mythology and, like, the ponderousness that dragged down all his other films, and I think it's nice that he's having fun, and even the twist here isn't like, there's a twist because it's a horror movie, and pretty much all horror movies have twists, but it's not like a M. Night Shyamalan Sixth Sense kind of twist.
Totally. Yeah. It was funny because he was on the Today Show, and they said, oh, in this movie, does it have a twist? And he didn't want to respond to that at all, and I don't blame him, because even twists have become a joke as far as he's concerned. But I think this one plays well. I like it. And yeah, so I think, you know, if this sounds appealing to you, this is the movie you should see this weekend. We actually wanted to review, and I'm only going to mention this because we are going to review it in an upcoming episode. We wanted to review Goodnight Mommy, but we refused to do it until Perry can review it with us. So that one's going to be a little delayed. But yeah, guys, look out for our Goodnight Mommy review because you want to talk horror. I'm changing the pronunciation of the word horror because that's how scary Goodnight Mommy is.
When you said that, I was just like, huh, that is one of those words that's kind of hard to say correctly, like in 30 Rock, that running joke about the rural juror. Horror. But anyway, clearly we've run out of things to say.
Yeah, so that's this week's episode. You guys can find us, our audio podcast is on iTunes. We will also still be posting it on YouTube. We have our info at popcornprosecco.com. We're at popcornprosecco on Twitter. And yeah, Ange, you want to do your plug?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter, and you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com because I write all over the web. Perry is at P. Nemiroff, and she writes for Collider, and she'll be covering TIFF, so be sure to check that out. And that's everything from us this week, guys. Have a good one.
I'm going to get you.